Because my understanding, I mean, I've got pictures on the wall at work which show me that this community was really rural. I mean, there's a lot of farmland and, you know, kids used to sort of, you know, walk to school through the meadows picking flowers. I don't know. Walter, picking flowers? Yep. Stealing fruit, you know, things like that, all of that. And it was, you know, it was very rural. I think one of the unique things about this community is that for a long time it has been very, it was at one point very much 50% Māori and 50% Pākehā. So that's quite unique in the country where there was where there were these kind of more, quite a bicultural environment. And but over sort of the 80s, it seems to me, when I look at my pictures on the wall, in particular 70s, 80s, there was a huge amount of development. So a lot of houses have been built through that era. And so it's become, you know, a suburb. It's become urban kind of thing. Now, what happens often when there's huge growth too quickly is that you actually get a lot of social problems. People are under a lot of stress. And because it's the edge of the city, a lot of people, poorer housing, cheaper housing, and so a lot of people shifted here because this was the only place they could afford to live. So ultimately what we have here in this area is incredible diversity. So we have diversity of culture. So basically at this point in time, this community is about 30% Māori, 30% Pacific, and 30% Pākehā. And of course an increasing Asian population, a lot of that being Indian. So cultural diversity, which creates its stresses and difficulties. The other thing is that we have had poverty, but it's not generalised. As we know, there are areas around here which are actually very wealthy that are almost, you know, backing up against areas that are extremely poor. So some parts of this community, the average income is $22,000 a year. The average income. That means half the community are living on less than that. That's not much. So poverty is a real characteristic in this area. And with poverty and the stress of poverty, there come issues like conflict, violence. So family violence, this community of Manurewa has one of the highest rates, if not the highest rate, in New Zealand. The police are busy. For those of you who live in Heartland Manurewa, you hear those cop cars, you know, all the time. So they are really busy. So lots of family violence. That means that there's a lot of issues around children. So there are families today where children are not going to have a great day. They're going to grow up in a home. They're going to be in a home today where there's going to be violence, where there may not be food on the table, where they don't know actually what's going to happen today. Today's a scary day for lots of kids in this community. And that's a real worry. And so as a country, we came to see that we had a responsibility for what happens to children within homes. Now, that only really happened in sort of through the 80s. And where, as a country, we said, you know, what's in a home is not just private any longer. It's actually our responsibility. And so we became much more involved in the private life of families. And so for organisations like Child, Youth and Family, for example, they are also extremely busy in this area because they have the responsibility, the government responsibility, of making sure that children are safe. And that's a really, really tough one. So those are the characteristics of our community. We are also the youngest community in New Zealand. The most under 15-year-olds in the country live in Manurewa. That's interesting. So we're young, lots and lots of families, lots and lots of schools, and there is a lot of poverty, and there is a lot of conflict, and there's a lot of children that aren't safe. So that's why IOSIS is here. We're here to do some things about that. So we've got a video now. So rather than me doing a long blurb, you get to see me on video, and the video will tell you a little bit more about the work of IOSIS. Let's roll.
IOSIS This is only a few years old, but was birthed out of 100 years of Baptist Social Services work with families and children. This is an organisation committed to giving families an opportunity to realise their dream of creating an environment for their children that's safe and strong.
Being a family can actually be quite hard work. However, we know that getting family right is critical to the very health of our society. I mean, if families aren't getting it right, we all pay a price. We pay a price in our justice system, in our education system, in our health system. So it's really critical that children get to grow up in families that are safe, that are strong, that are stable and nurturing. And for some families, it's made even more difficult by issues like poverty, unemployment. I mean, here in New Zealand, 22% of our children grow up in a family where there's poverty. So families find themselves trapped in these patterns. In New Zealand here, every 7 minutes, the police are called out to a situation of family violence. Every 2.5 weeks, someone kills their partner. Every month, a child is killed. Those are horrific statistics in New Zealand. Now, families don't want it to be that way. They want it to be different. The problem for them is they don't know how. They don't know how to do it different. They haven't seen it done differently. And that's why we exist. That's why IOSIS is here, because we want to give families that opportunity to become what they want to be. They want to learn the skills. They want to feel and experience what safety would be like, what stability would be like, what it's like to be a strong family. And so we want to give them those opportunities to learn, to be coached, to experience a new way of being family. That word IOSIS, what that actually means is the process whereby a base metal becomes gold. Now, that's actually a miracle. So around here, we talk about the miracle of transformation, because a changed life is a miracle. We want to give families the opportunity to become all they're created to be. We want to equip them to be safe, to be strong, to be together. We're going to give you an opportunity to hear some of those miracle stories.
Through the arrangements of my contact with my children, I had to come to my IOSIS supervised contact, and over time the workers were just so supportive and helpful that we settled in quite nicely. Being that supervised for a period of time, I eventually and gradually moved to unsupervised contact, but then come to find that IOSIS had a lot more to offer, and that extended into like the likes of parenting programs that they had, as well as counselling, which helped me deal with the issues at the time. And after coming and looking into other avenues that IOSIS had to offer, I came to be on a men's development program just to improve myself, and as where John taught me how to, you know, be more open and relaxed and more positive instead of finding negative in conversations I do have with professionals, and being more open-minded. So that was a real benefit to me and how I carry myself today, and it has made me move forward in a lot of aspects, especially with my family and bringing my family home, and it's been real prosperous in that manner. And this is what I find interesting about IOSIS workers, is that they do work from the heart and not so much from the textbook, and just with the unsupervised contact and where we're going with it through the next stages, so to speak, it's like the reunification of my family, you know, and then being brought back into my care eventually.
I'm Karen, and I spent about 4.5 months in Maryvale last year. I had to go to Maryvale. It was a shortcut to getting custody of my 4-year-old son. I'd been in prison, and he was in my care. Both my children were in my care before I went to prison. When I got out, I had to fight to get them back. The fastest way to get them back was to embrace Maryvale. I thought the classes would be really boring. Actually, I thought I'd know it all. And it was quite good to actually find out that I didn't know it all, and I learnt heaps from the classes, and I really, really enjoyed them. They're only 2 hours a day. Things I learnt there, I wish I had learnt years ago, like how to be assertive instead of passive-aggressive. That was really kind of life-altering, that just that one statement. When I got that, it was like, wow, I'm really quite aggressive, you know? What I liked most about the whole Maryvale experience and being there was that they embrace your strengths and they help you deal with your weaknesses, and that's staff and course and other women. So I found, by the time I left there, I was a lot more confident. I had a plan, I had goals, and I found they were easy to achieve. You know, so 10 months later, I mean, I'm working, you know, 5 days a week. My 4-year-old's living with me. My 16-year-old is soon, in 2 weeks' time, to be living with us. We're still waiting for our own home, so we're still in an IOSIS home, but it's a lovely home, and we're happy to be there. But like last Mother's Day was the first Mother's Day that I'd had both my boys together for a couple of years, and so that was a special day.
People go to a mall because they can go to one place and they can get a whole lot of different things. That's what IOSIS is like for families. So they might come here because they want some help with budgeting, because they want to come and do a parenting group, or they might have to come in order to be able to see their children safely. However, when they get here, they realise that, hey, Dad can do a program to help him communicate with his kids. Mum and Dad together can do some counselling to work on their relationship. They can do family therapy as a whole family with their children. They might need a residential program for some people, or they might want someone coming into their home to actually coach them with those parenting skills. Coming to IOSIS is like coming to a one-stop shop for families. We're able to respond to families to give them what they need, when they need it, to equip them to be safe and strong together.
Hey, my name's Dean Clarkson. I'm the pastor at Mangere Baptist Church. We've been in the IOSIS family for about 5.5 years now. We lived at Maryvale for 3 years and got to see firsthand these beautiful women and children. And from that moment on, we developed a passion to walk alongside these women. And so as a church, we've been partnering with them for the last 2.5 years, trying to love them back to life and do life with them. And for us, it can be in the small things that we celebrate with them. And for me, one of the most precious experiences was one of the ladies getting her learner's license. And she lifted it above her head like a trophy, and the smile lit up the room. And that's why we do what we do, to see life come out of these beautiful women and to see these lovely children be nurtured and loved by many in the family. We're committed to this journey long term. I encourage you to be committed to this work, to support these people, to support the work of IOSIS.
That's us at IOSIS. You've heard some amazing stories about lives that have been changed. I really believe that New Zealanders care about families. We want to make a difference for our communities and for our next generation. We want you to partner with us. We want you to join with us. We need your support. We need you to support us financially. We need you to support us in prayer. We need you to support us as volunteers. We need you to support us by giving things that families can use. So join us in the adventure. It's amazing.
I'm going to tell you a little bit about Maryvale. I thought just to start, before I tell you a little bit about Maryvale, I kind of wanted to introduce my family, because actually without my family, I couldn't do the work. So I'm here today with my husband Gordon, and we will be married in August for 20 years. He's put up with me for 20 years. He's a brave man. We have three beautiful children. We have our daughter Amy, who some of you know. Amy was my daughter originally. I was a single mum, and she's 25 now, and she's married to Matt, and we have a granddaughter called Esther, and she's 7 months old. And Gordon says that I'm just a big softie when it comes to Amy and Esther, and I am, I confess. But we together have two lovely boys, Michael, who's 18 and he's at university now studying IT, and Peter, who's in his last year of high school and has to pass, otherwise he's going to pay back his school fees. So that's the incentive. I've been with IOSIS for 5 years. I'm a trained social worker, and I started my study when Peter was four. I felt God call me back to school. I never got my school C or my UE, but I trained to be a social worker and started my social work career at the Anglicans, working at Granger Grove, which is another residential program. But about 5.5 years ago, I was getting a bit restless because I sort of do that. It's okay, really. And I started looking on Seek one day, and there was a job at Merivale that popped up. Hadn't seen it before, so I applied, and within a few days, I'd met with Ruby, and she'd offered me the job to come in as social worker. So I arrived on my first day, and there was like 20 files sitting on my desk, and they said, "Here you go, Wendy, it's all yours, go to it." And I stayed in that role for a while, but what I actually started to see were there were things that I wanted to do. So I was sort of, you know, I'm a bit of a go-girl. I kept going to Ruby and saying, "Look, this, I've got some ideas." And so then I supported Sue as the assistant manager, and about three and a half years ago, I moved into the manager's role. I'm an overachiever, perfectionist, who just really loves to do life. But actually, Merivale has managed to capture my heart. And I hadn't realised that till I went away on Christmas holiday this last year, and I was quite cross with myself because I've actually not ever let anything grab my heart the way that Merivale has. But Merivale's a really special place. It's a home for women and children who have suffered domestic violence, drug and alcohol issues, parenting, who didn't have great role models. Actually, a lot of our girls have been living in families that were like once for worries. I tried to watch that movie once, but I got into about a quarter of an hour and I sat sobbing because I could see so many of these girls' faces, and I had to stop because actually what I see on a daily basis is the end product of what's happened to them. Most of these girls get referred to from SIPs for us. Some have lost their children already, and this is their last chance. Some are just about to lose their children, and they really need to come and make some changes. So we run the program for 3 to 6 months. We have domestic violence groups, drug and alcohol groups, parenting groups that we have Diane, lovely Diane, comes to take for us. We have an addictions group. We do things like household management because, you know, these girls don't know how to do jobs. They don't know how to clean kitchens and clean toilets and all of those boring things that I kind of got taught to do in life. And so they need to learn to do life differently. But also for the children, these children are damaged. They've seen so much, and I often say when I look at the children, they have dead eyes. And they have dead eyes because they've witnessed so much stuff that they shouldn't have had to witness. So we have therapy for children, and mums go to therapy with children. And so mums learn how to parent differently. They don't smack their kids anymore. They don't yell and scream at them anymore. They actually learn how to be really gentle parents. We had a girl who came and said, "I don't have a problem, I don't need to be here. But Wendy thinks I've got a problem because all I do is scream at my child all day," which really sort of would grate with me. So I used to try and get alongside her each day and try and help her to learn different ways of talking to this child. Because actually these kids get immune and they shut down and they stop listening. So in the mornings we run groups. We have a karakia every day and we try and have a thought every day because, you know, we're a Christian-based agency. One should do these things, really, but we do it because it's really important, and most of our girls are Māori, and so it's very important to them. So group is process. We as staff don't go in there, but in the afternoons they've got to put it into practice, and we can have 10 women and up to 25 children living at our place, and it's not a house. It's a very big, long building, and it gets a little bit mad. So when 10 women aren't agreeing with each other, we have a lot of conflict resolution to sort out. And so they've got to learn to put that into practice. And I must say, seeing Karen again just reminded me, man, she was a tough nut, that girl. But, you know, she was willing to change. And I think that's the key. These women need to want to come and want to change. And so it's exciting. It's really exhausting. It's very time-consuming, but it's well worth it. And we went away at Christmas and we didn't have a fabulous holiday because it rained. And, you know, we go camping. We're in the rain. We've never come home from camping before, but we had to this year. But I came back to work feeling a bit this year, wondering what was happening and really asking God to show me why we do what we do at Maryvale, because I was feeling a bit discouraged. And I was with Amy and Esther at Kmart one night buying Easter eggs for the children because we wanted to have an Easter hunt. And this girl wandered up to me and said, "Oh, hi, Wendy, how are you?" And I go, "Oh, I'm good, how are you?" Thinking, "Oh, who's this person?" And then she started to talk and she reminded me that she'd been at Maryvale. And she'd probably come to Maryvale just as I'd started there because I was her social worker. And her children had been taken out of her care. She couldn't go away on the weekends on her own. She had to go to her whānau in Papakura, and she used to really hate that because she just wanted to go out with her kids on her own. But she said, "Wendy, my kids no longer have SIFs involved in their life. I've got them back. I'm on my own. I'm in my own house, and I'm training to be a social worker." Well, I just cried because I was just like, well, you know, here I am feeling a bit disillusioned, Lord, and you just brought me the answer. So then I asked her what her name was because I still couldn't remember her name. And she told me her name because I've probably seen 100 people, you know, in the last 5 years. And I remembered I used to have to drive this girl to Papakura every Friday afternoon at about 4:30. And I used to mutter under my breath to myself because all I wanted to do was go home to my own family because it was the end of the week and I just wanted to clear off and go home. And I wouldn't get home till sort of 5:30, 6 o'clock. And she said, "Do you remember when you used to take me home every week to my family?" And I said, "Yes." She goes, "That was the most important thing anyone had ever done for me." And I said, "You know, I used to mutter all the way back about that." And she goes, "Well, shame on you, Wendy." And I said, "Yes." I felt totally rebuked. But I thought it was inspiring because we often don't see the woman when they've left. And you know what? She just looked like me. She just was beautifully dressed and together, and to go and study now was like, well, God had really touched her life. And so God is a big factor for us at Maryvale because actually he sits right in the middle of everything we do, and we are very overt with the girls with them. So that's just a little bit about us. And I'm going to pass it on to John.
Hi, my name is John. I've been John all my life. And the argument started when I was born. My first name is actually Noel, and my mother lost that fight. My dad wanted me to call John. I was brought up in a little town called Murupara in the Bay of Plenty. And way back, well, actually not that long ago, but way back then when I was born, well, I was brought up, was a village, and my dad was a bushman. And, you know, it's not till years later that I realized, wow, how much of an influence that has on me today. I was so privileged to have lived in a village, just like those Pacific Islanders do, you know. I don't know why they leave the islands and come to this city. I really can't understand them. And but I did the same. I left this wonderful village and moved to the city and moved into life, I guess. I spent 20 years in the emergency services. I was a fireman, ambulance officer, and then I joined the Salvation Army. So it was good to see Dave, Emma. They're probably out there with their teenagers now. And then I joined probation. And I was based at Pukekohe for 3 years. And after 3 years, I was, you know, these guys come out of prison and they go through the justice system. And within a short time, I'd tell them to go to an anger management program, you go to counseling, you go to alcohol and drugs. And I remember one guy coming back, and he had done his 13 weeks at Friendship House, no disrespect. But he traveled from Pukekohe there, and he came back and he sat opposite me, and I asked him a question, and he got angry with me. And I thought, whoa, something's going on here. He's just finished 13 weeks, and he's still angry. And you know what? It was my God heart. I gave my heart back to God when I was 27, and I could see right through that guy's heart. And you know what? This is no disrespect to any programs or to any justice system, but like Jason said on the DVD, he says, you know what? They don't hit the heart. Iosis works from the heart. And you know what? I think I better have a talk to our justice system about that, because I can't let it go. I honestly believe that our justice system can be so harsh. And where is the heart factor? Well, I started, and really I couldn't handle that in probation, Because you know what? These guys would end up back in prison. And I just saw multiple guys coming out of prison and within a short time going back. So I came to this crossroad. And I had a choice. Either I quit or I get stuck in. So I got stuck in. I applied to be a program facilitator. And, you know, corrections paid, $20,000-$30,000 to train me. And I started running programs. And I ran programs for 4 years in probation. And I loved it. There was one downside. When I gave the certificates after these 100-hour programs, I could see the same thing. Whoa, he's got a certificate. He should be fine. Never offend again. But you know what? When I handed out these certificates, I saw right through that guy. And I thought, what is going on here? And within a short time, those guys were back in prison again, or they were back in the justice system again. So I was at the same crossroad 4 years later. What do I do? Where am I going? This is not working. I'm not happy. I'm seeing things. And my Christian faith, where's this fitting into the justice system? So I left. I quit programs. I asked God's permission for that. They sent me back to Pukeko on the front line. And within a couple of weeks, one of the ex-probation officers that had gone from Pukeko was working at IOSIS. And she rang me up. And she says, what are you doing, John? And I said, funny you ask. I says, I've just finished probation. I've had enough. No disrespect to probation. But I'm seeing these things with people, and I'm frustrated about what I'm going to do with them. So I came to IOSIS, and of course, Ruby saw me straight away and says, we need you, John. But you know, I had a woman came and had a talk with me on Friday, Beulah Woods. And she says, John, what's unique about your program? And after half an hour, she says, John, what's unique about your program is you, is me. I'm unique. You're unique. And boy, if only we all just realized that, how unique we were. And I got Jason. You saw Jason up there? Boy, you wouldn't want to go near him. He'd been in prison. He came out. And I remember the minute he walked in the door, and I thought, whoa, you know, this is my, my Holy Spirit eyes. Jason, what are you doing? He says, I've just been kicked out of Child, Youth, and Family. I'm not allowed to go to FGCs. I'm fighting for my children. I hate probation. I hate the world. My wife's an alcoholic. I'm not allowed to see my children. Fine, what else is a problem? I said, Jason, the first thing you need to do is go and see your mum. What do you mean go see my mum? I says, go see your mum up north. And what had happened is Jason's mum had died while he was in prison. And the justice system, this is where the heart, he was down in Christchurch. And they says, oh no, you're going to be released in 2 weeks. You can go and see your mum then. Culturally inappropriate. And Jason was angry. He was wild. And I guess it's no fault of anybody else's, but I says, Jason, you need to go see your mum. He says, yeah. He turned up the next week. I says, I've got your book, Jason. What do you want? I told you what to do. Go up north. So I explained to him. And what IOSIS has given me, what Ruby has given me the opportunity to do is she sort of gave me a blank page. This is the way I put it. She gave me a blank page and says, John, go and do what you need to do. And you see, that gave me permission to be this unique person that I am today. And I did. I started working with these men. And Jason was virtually one of my first clients, actually, in the first year that I started the men's program. And he came the second session. I said, what are you doing, Jason? And he said, I told you to go up north. I haven't got any money, John. Came up with all the excuses. And so I taught him a few things. And he came back the third week. And I says, Jason, if you come back next week, I'm going to take you across that bridge and kick your bum and you can hitchhike all the way up to Kaitaia. Well, Jason never turned back. He never turned up the fourth week. But he turned up on the sixth week. And as soon as he walked in the door, I thought, wow, something amazing has happened to this man. We sat down and he talked, and he said, yeah, John, I went to see my mum, went to her grave, said hi, and walked out. And I thought, oh, God, here we go. But the first thing he did was he went and tidied his mum's house up. Now, nobody knows his story. Actually, the courts don't want to know his story. And I'm afraid that probation missed a lot of stuff about a person's life. And Jason, 2 years prior to that, he took him and his wife and his children up north to look after his mum who was dying of cancer. And he looked after her for 18 months. He washed his mum, he fed her, gave her medication, and then he got drunk with his wife and had a fight, and we ended up in prison. And then his sister had to go up and look after her. And she didn't like that at all. So I was sending Jason back to a vulnerable place. But you know, he cleaned the house up and he went back to the urapa, and he spent over a week talking to his mum on that urapa. And he says, John, after about 6-7 times, he says, I heard my mum talk to me. I said, what is she saying? And she says, son, I'm sad you weren't at my funeral, and I want to thank you for washing me, for cleaning me, for feeding me, and looking after me when I was sick. And she said, son, I love you. And he came back and walked in that door, and there was, he says, it's like a backpack has set me free, John. And you know what? I wish every client was like that. But I believe that God gives me the answer to some of those treasures. Because I am so privileged. These guys come and see me, and I see these things, and I'll work with them, and they just don't want to leave. You know, traditionally, you're supposed to have an hour with clients. Sometimes I have 2 hours because they don't want to leave. I get them to understand what's going on with them. I get them to understand how hard their heart is. I get them to understand what freedom is. And I guess I only stand here today because I'm set free by the grace of God. And I know what freedom is. Because you know what? I had to go and apologize to my dad. Actually, I didn't go to play. I wanted him to apologize to me. But he didn't apologize. And God showed me, after I went there and talked to my dad, I was set free. So I know a lot of these men that I get, are, you know, they're hurt. Any man you hear that hits a woman, they are screaming inside. And God has given me these wonderful tools to work with them. And as Beulah said, I'm unique. And that's how I see every client that I work with. They are unique. And sometimes our so-called systems, just these guys need another alternative. Just an update on Jason. 2 years ago, well, when Jason came back, I says, Jason, now you are ready to fight child, youth, and family. When all that stuff is gone, and so I went to, you know, this is the social worker side that I was in. I went to FGCs, I went to Strengthening Families meetings with him, and a long story short, 2 years ago, Jason's now got his own house in Pamia. He hasn't drunk for probably 3 years now. He's separated from his partner, but 2 years ago was the first year that he had his 3 children at home, and he's a solo dad. And I walked into his house, and he had a flat-screen TV and a computer, and I says, whoa, bro, you know, where'd that come from, bro? And he says, you know, John, it's all genuine. And to just look back, because I haven't seen that thing of him for, you know, quite a few years now, and to see that the movement in him, you know, Jason is unique, I'm unique, you're unique, and by the grace of God, if there's enough unique people, we can change the world. God bless you.
Kia ora whānau. It's really lovely to be here. My name is Marion Spicer, and I just want to acknowledge my husband, Tony, who's come with me today as well. So thank you, Tony, for being with me. Thank you for always being my support. And thank you to the staff as well that I work with. It's a privilege to work with people who support you and support what you do. As I said before, in looking after the Family Learning Centre at IOSIS Family Solutions, when Ruby asked me to do this today, I had been thinking for quite a long time about a scripture that keeps coming to me all the time when I'm working with our clients. It says, for I have come that they might have life and have it abundantly. The other scripture that has come to me is the same one that Ruby read out this morning. And I always think, isn't that wonderful when that happens? It's not contrived, it just happens. And it speaks of the brokenhearted. And it actually came from Isaiah, when Isaiah the prophet prophesied that the Messiah would come and that he would heal the brokenhearted and set the captives free. Our clients come to us broken. There is no mistake about that. They don't have abundant life at all. Their lives, as Ruby has described it, are poverty-stricken and not just financially. The two things that cause that to happen, I believe, is social isolation and a lack of knowledge. So what we do in our Family Learning Centre is we address both of those issues. We have groups and we run groups. We run a family resilience program, which is a 7-week program. Sometimes it rolls into 8 weeks. We run parenting programs, and most recently we've started running a young parents program. Just by virtue of the fact that people come to a group, suddenly their social isolation has gone. They are with other people who live the same lives that they do. Their problems are not unique to them. It's great to be part of a group where you can say, I know how that feels. In our family resilience program, we go through who am I? Who am I with other people? Who am I with my children? Nowhere in that program do we actually say, now I'm going to talk to you about how bad you are. We never ever say that. It's easy for me and it's easy for the people that I work with to see the very best in everybody that walks in that door. No judgment. No, you better do this differently. None of that. People come in there and they come to an environment that is created for them of acceptance and of love that allows them to start the process of forgiving themselves and others. And it's a unique and privileged opportunity that we have to actually see that take place. Not long ago in our last group, we always go around the group and we say, what's different for you? What have you done this week? And I'll never forget one couple saying, quite shyly, we're going out to dinner tonight. And they had been invited out to dinner by another couple in the group. This is something that we all take for granted. We go out to dinner with our friends all the time. This couple had never been invited to dinner before. And it meant huge things to them. Not long after that, a group of them went to the city. That same couple invited, I think, 4 other people to go into the city with them, into Auckland City. 3 of those people had never been to Auckland City in their life. That is down the road. That's a train trip away. But they had never gone. And what did they do when they got there? They learnt that they lived in a big city. It was an eye-opener to them. Then they went to Mission Bay and they had a barbecue. First time they had ever socially got together where there was no alcohol, no drugs, just a good time. What have they learnt? They've learnt something. Their social isolation is less. Their life is a little bit more abundant. We also had a girl as we went round our group one day. And she said, she was a beautiful, beautiful young woman, and she said, when I was 5, someone in my family hurt me very badly. She said, I'm in my 30s now, and last week, and I have not seen that man since I was 5. But last week, I found him, and I forgave him. And somebody else in the group said, how did that feel? How do you feel? And she said, free. Another man said he had not seen his father for 10 years and he gathered his children up in a van and off they went to see his father, who he had not seen for 10 years. And they got near to where he lived by a beach. He told the kids, wait there. And for an hour, he went and told his father what he thought of him and how things had been bad. And he said, but I have come to forgive you. And then he went and he got his children from the beach, brought the mokapuna to see Kuru, who some of them had never ever met. And the restoration and the broken heart started to be healed. The next week, which was Easter, he got the whole family, the brothers and the sisters, and they all went there, and that man cannot get enough of his father. He can't spend enough time with him. A miracle took place that day. But you know what? Nowhere in our program do we actually say, today is the day, we've come this far in our program, when you must go off and find people who have wronged you and forgive them. We never do that. We never address the issue head on. What we do is we tell people about the great things that they are, the strength of who they are, who they've come from, their proud and strong heritage and background. We reunite them with their culture. We talk to them about the pride that they have to have with one another and how wonderful it is to have a relationship with another person who loves you. And we talk about the wonderful thing, the miracle of having children and what that means. And through that, people make those decisions to do those powerful things themselves. We can't do this alone. We can never do this alone. The only way that we can do this is by the power of God, and also by the power of a shared understanding and a shared belief that we all live under. We believe strongly, all of us do, and if we didn't, we'd have to take the sign off the road that calls us iosis, the miracle of a transformed life, the miracle of the power of God being allowed to infiltrate a person's life even for a brief moment. That every single time we meet somebody who walks up our driveway, that moment is memorable to us and memorable to them. We have a great, great team of people who hold powerful beliefs, and I want to acknowledge those people because without them, we wouldn't be able to do what we do. And the first person I'd like to acknowledge is you, Diane. Is Diane, stand up please, Diane. Diane does all our parenting programs and I think she deserves a huge round of applause. Diane exemplifies what people can become. Not only does she do that, but she brings home baking. She is known by people. People say, I love Diane's baking. But then we hear people say, I love Diane. I remember one woman, she'd just come back from the program and we had to put a publication out and I said to her, quick, I need a quote from you. How's the parenting program helped you? And she said, well, I used to yell at my kids, but now I do it softly. And I just always am amazed. The smell of cooking, the way that Diane gets the room ready for people, the absolute honour that she shows every person that comes into that place. It's not the program that changes people's lives. It's the feeling and the passion behind that. And that's what you do, Diane. And thank you so much for the years of faithfulness of doing that. In our family resilience program, we draw on staff, actually, to come along and run this program. And we have John. Where are you, John? And Rob. And as you've heard, John has a passion to change the lives and to help people to change and understand the change process that needs to happen in their lives. We love the people that walk up our path. We love them. And all of the things that they bring with them, all their brokenness, all their sorrow, all their pain, all their brokenheartedness, we love them. And it's good for us. It's easy for us to see the best in them. It really is. And when we hear them doing things and saying things that we take for granted, we know that somewhere a little seed has started that will bring them an abundance of life that they otherwise haven't experienced. Thank you, everybody.
Don't I work with some gorgeous people? And this is just a taste. You know, there's others who couldn't make it this morning. But we want to sing to you. So I invite the team to all come up again. And this is a song that has become the song of the Family Resilience Program in lots of ways. Oh, we're all going back up on stage. So we've got John with the guitar. Where's John? We didn't lose John, did we? Or we're really up against it. Okay, so come forward, whānau, come forward.